to write and beginning of Debbie's first report this Friday after supper, 17th November 72. Channel 2 write, beginning of Debbie's first report this Friday after supper, 17th November 72. Channel 2 write, and beginning of Debbie's first report this Friday after supper, 17th November 72.
The symphony of turnip greens and pork chops and grits is wonderful. See, I can be in lots of worlds. I can be in just lots of worlds.
You know what I'm telling you? I don't know if I'm going to be able to do anything that night.
To learn how to talk. That's right. I mean, I can write things down, but I can't talk. Every time I open my mouth, I think, I can't talk. It's like somebody's tied my tongue off. Because I'm so conscious of every word I say. Well, let me tell you about the acid pills. It's a funny story. We wanted to have our hair cut. Candy wanted to have her hair cut. And I decided I would have mine cut, too. And so her cousin told us that the only place we could go was the Athens Hilton, because they spoke English there. And the Athens Hilton, you have to understand, is a little piece of America that we didn't bring Greece back over here. They took it over there. And it's air-conditioned, and it's an American motel, and it has all kinds of little stores and things on the first floor. And if you go to Greece and you don't want to be too hot and you don't want to be too dirty, you stay there. So, but it is true that they spoke English because they were only Americans there. So we went to have our hair cut at the Athens Hilton. Well, I had never had my hair cut anywhere except in Gainesville, Florida, at a beauty parlor right next to where we lived. I didn't know anything about a beauty parlor that had more than one chair where you had your hair cut. I thought all beauty parlors just had one chair and you went in and sat in that chair. I'd seen barbershops that had two or three chairs, but never a beauty parlor. So we walked in, and there were not only two or three, but there were about 15 chairs where you could have your hair cut. And the woman said to us, we said, well, we'd like our hair cut. And she said, all right, you come right into this little room here. And we noticed that everybody was wearing these smocks over their clothes. Well, we didn't look closely, and we thought that we were supposed to take our clothes off and then put these little coats on. So we both proceeded to undress. We took off all our clothes and put on these little things that you're supposed to put on to keep the hair from going down your back. Well, they fasten right here, and that's all. We walked out of the cloakroom, flying open, you know, nothing on. They sat us down on opposite sides of this mirror, but we could kick each other under the mirror, you know. Well, they proceeded to, first of all, Candy wanted to have, well, we both wanted to have our hair cut. And I said to the boy that was cutting my hair, I said, you know, I'd like you to cut my hair. He said, oh, you don't need your hair cut. And I said, well, it's my hair. I'd like my hair cut. He said, you don't need it cut. I'll wash it for you. I said, well, please, I came here to have my hair cut. And he said, no, I'm not going to cut it for you. In the meantime, on the other side of the mirror, Candy was having her hair completely cut off. They just cut it all off. I mean, she came out looking like a boy with hair about this long, because he said, well, I think you look well with short hair. So he cut all her hair off. She was trying to, under the mirror, she was trying to kick me to tell me, you know, that, what, look, they're doing something terrible to me. Get me out of this. She's kicking me under the mirror. Meanwhile, both of us are completely undressed with just these little smocks on. So they sat us down to have our hair dry. There were 15 dryers, what, down. And another thing, everybody that came in there had a poodle. They, you know, walked in with their little poodle dogs. So we sat down to have our hair dried and fortunately managed to sit next to each other. We couldn't talk, but we wrote notes back and forth to each other, sitting under the dryers about what had happened to us, having our hair cut, trying desperately, valiantly to cover up the fact that we didn't have any clothes on. We didn't know how much it was going to cost. So we thought we didn't have enough money. Because Candy said, she wrote to me a note and she said, you know, he said, would you like this rinse on your hair? And I said, yes. And you know, I bet that's another $5. She said, I hope that beauty parlors have dishes to wash. But we did manage to leave, paying everything and getting all our clothes back, but we never went back again. And I had my hair cut in France, in Nice. Before I left Nice, I wanted to have my hair cut once. And it was, I just had this deja vu. I walked into this place and I thought, it's the Athens Hilton. This is, and I forgot every word of French I knew. It was in June and I spoke perfectly fine French. I forgot everything I knew. I couldn't say a word. My eyes got big and I was paralyzed. I thought, oh no, he's not going to cut my hair. He's going to refuse to cut my hair again, and I don't have Candy to write notes to under the dryer. But he managed to cut it.
Now, you see, I don't know Candy too well.
Oh, Candy has been my best friend since I was in seventh grade, and I lived with her in Boston. And we have just always been best friends. She's Greek. Her grandparents immigrated from Greece, and part of the reason, we took a long trip through the Peloponnesus, and part of the reason was to find Candy's grandparents' homes and take pictures of them. And she speaks a little bit of Greek, but not really enough. Her grandmother doesn't speak any English at all. She's been in this country 60 years, and she refused to learn to speak English because she wanted her children to speak Greek to her, and so they do. But she's quite a formidable woman. That was an arranged marriage. Her Candy's grandfather came over to this country and decided that he was going to get married. He was a monk. He was going to be a Greek Orthodox priest in Greece, and he went into the monastery when he was about 18, and he got terribly disillusioned because all of the monks were jumping over the walls at night to go see their girlfriends in town. And he got very disillusioned, so he jumped over the wall and went to America. And then when he got to America, he settled in Atlanta, and he decided that he wanted a wife, and so he wrote to his family in Greece, and they arranged this marriage and sent her over. And then about 6 months ago, she left him one day. Because she decided, she had fabricated in her mind that he helped to found an organization called AHEPA, which is a Greek-American, now it just sort of supports Spiro Agnew and all the Greeks that are running for political office. But at that time, when he founded it, it was to get rights for Greek-Americans. And they used to have a lot of trouble with the Ku Klux Klan in Atlanta. There's a large Greek community there. But anyway, Harry Angel is one of the founding fathers, Harry Angelopoulos. And so he goes to every convention that they have, and he just loves it. He's 80, he must be 86 or 87 now. And Mrs. Angel doesn't go with him to all of these. And the last one that he went to about 6 months ago, he apparently met some younger woman who was so young that she was, let me get this straight. Now, he met a younger woman who had a daughter who was going to be presented, and she wanted Mr. Angel to present her daughter, which was a very nice thing for him to do. Well, Mrs. Angel was so alarmed because he was going to present this woman's daughter that she fabricated this romance in her mind, and she left him. She walked out of the house and left him and went trotting off down the street. And his daughter who lives in Atlanta was there, and she just got terribly concerned. She said, "Pop, aren't you going to do something? She's left you. She's 89 years old, and she just walked. She can't walk. Where's she going? She just walked out of the house." And he said, "Oh, it's all right. She needs to have a walk. She hasn't had a walk in 5 years. She could take a walk." And she walked over to her friend's house 2 blocks away and spent the afternoon and came back for supper. She's the one that makes yogurt wrapping it. In a towel, or not in a towel, in a wool blanket.
That's Candy's grandmother.
That's Candy's grandmother. And then her father's family, that's her mother's family. And her father's family, that I met her father's sister, well, actually, I've met a lot of her father's relatives. There's a sister that lives in Athens, and then there's a sister and a brother who live in Washington. And when we were in Greece, we lived in an apartment that belonged to one of her uncles. And he had two apartments, and one of them was vacant that summer. So we stayed in that apartment, and he came, this was the uncle from Washington, and he came over and stayed in his other apartment sort of toward the end of the summer. And then the aunt and uncle and two cousins who were in Athens sort of looked after us a little bit too. And we stayed there for about a week after we arrived, not speaking a word of Greek at all. It hampered us a little bit. But oh, that was the first time I'd ever lived. It was the first time I'd ever been in a city, ever lived in a city. And it was the first time that I'd ever lived in an apartment. And I used to wash dishes all the time. I used to wash dishes just compulsively all the time. No one else would wash dishes but me. And I just wash dishes and wash dishes and wash dishes. And when I think about that apartment, I think about washing glasses and stacking them up in the dish tray. I should have learned about having roommates who don't wash dishes.
Oh, Candy.
Well, she washes dishes if they're hers, but if they're all hers.
And but you've known Candy since you were 9 years old?
Mm-hmm.
In Boston. You were doing in Boston when you were 9 years old?
No. I lived with her in Boston. When I worked at Tufts, we lived together.
Oh.
Candy and Marcia, she's from Fall River, which is about 2 hours south of Boston. And she met Candy and was living with Candy, and they were living with a third girl. And then I moved up to Boston, and the three of us got another apartment and lived together for 2 years. And that was my Marcia's Jewish, and I used to go home with her for the holidays. I'd go home with her for Passover every year.
Went out from where? From Boston?
From Boston to Fall River.
Well, now your Boston is started after you left Duke.
Yes, in 1969.
Gee whiz.
I went to Boston. That was after I'd been in Europe again for 3 months.
Yeah.
And I went up to Boston the day before my 22nd birthday, because I wanted to fly Youth Fair one last time. And I couldn't fly Youth Fair after you're 21, you can't. And so I was going to turn 22 on the 23rd, so I flew on the 21st.
Well, like Candy. With a friend of yours in Gainesville, in the 7th grade.
In Gainesville, yes. I went to high school with her from the 7th grade through the 12th grade. And then we were friends through college, and we went to Greece when we were both in college.
Oh, she went out to college with you?
No, her brother did. Her brother Lee went to Duke with me. But Candy went to Agnes Scott in Atlanta. And then she went up to Boston right after she graduated from Agnes Scott in 1969.
And then you joined.
And then
I
went up there too. I went up to, actually I was going to go to New York. I was going to move to New York. I had it all planned. And I went up to Boston to visit Candy, because we were such good friends and I hadn't seen her in 6 months. And so I thought I'd go up and visit her, and then I would go down to New York. And my friend Russell was in New York then. Russell is the hammock, and she was already in New York, and so I was going to go then from Boston to New York, and stay with Russell and get a job in New York. But I decided I liked Boston, and I decided, well, I'd just sort of look for a job in Boston, and if I found one, I'd stay, and I found one right away.
Yeah.
So then it was pretty
easy.
And
what did Russell say about that, you know?
She came to visit me. She came up the next month and visited.
Yeah.
Well, she already had an apartment and a roommate.
Well, now look how things would have turned out. So you hadn't been in Greece all that time.
That's right. Wouldn't have been in Greece with living with Candy, you mean?
Yes.
That's right.
You would have been
in Mississippi.
Working on the landlords with Russell.
Maybe.
You see, your outlook would be kind of different, wouldn't it?
I would be. Anybody who lives in New York has a they change. I think I was trying to write on New York this week, and I just can't because I don't know anything about it. I mean, I've been there a lot, actually. You know, weekends, and I spent a week there this fall.
But after the Candy, what did Agnes Scott do to Candy?
Well, it's never a question of what anything does to Candy. It's a question of what Candy does to something else.
Oh.
She's one of the most active people I've ever known. She makes things happen to herself. She walks into things and makes them happen. She went to Boston and...
Well, that's the she's one ought to be down here working with me.
That's right. You should listen to her talk. She talks so fast. She talks faster than anyone I know.
Yeah.
She just talks a mile a minute. And when she first went up to Boston, people couldn't understand her because there was the combination of the fact that she talked fast and she had a southern accent. And they couldn't understand her. She'd zip like that to the end of what she was saying. And they had a real hard time. They used to just, I can remember people saying to Candy when we'd be in a group of people, Candy, just say one word at a time. Don't talk so fast. You say four words at once. She went up to Boston and just, she'd never worked. She'd never had any kind of job. Well, she...
Now look, Debbie, if you want some air, open the door, or I'll open this one. It's hot over there.
No, I'm comfortable, as a matter of
fact.
Really
comfortable.
She feels good. She never...
Well, you can talk, you know, and you have to be comfortable.
I'm comfortable.
And let me tell you, there's one thing I don't do is read minds. I don't care what it is. If you've got a headache, you tell me.
Okay.
And don't make
I'll
me guess. I don't like cats. I can't stand them. You know what cats do? You have to find out what their address is. Their dog will talk to you. How are we?
Candy's
we were with Candy when she went up to Boston. Candy went up to Boston. She'd worked in college. Actually, she'd done a couple things in college. She was a cocktail waitress and that kind of thing. In college, but she went up to Boston and she just walked into this advertising agency and convinced them not that she should be their receptionist or their typist or something like that, which is what generally people start you off in or as, but she ended up in a week she was the head of their media and production, which means that she took the ads and had them produced and placed them in magazines in a week. She worked at this for 2 years working in this advertising agency.
Were you living with her part of the time?
Yes, I was living with her the whole time. Well, the whole, except for about 4 or 5 months when I was in Europe. Then...
Did you learn something about those things?
About I learned about advertising agencies.
Yeah.
A little bit.
That's
this
nice.
One... It's really funny because they were always on the verge of bankruptcy, but they all lived off the company. There were... How many of them were in there? 1, 2, 3. When Candy first worked there, there were about 5 or 6 people. But by the time she left, they were down to 4. They kept losing people because they were losing money. And the reason that they were losing money was that everybody in the agency lived on the agency. They would buy a car and charge it to the agency. They would go to Europe for 3 weeks and charge it to the agency. They would go to Bermuda for the weekend and charge it to the agency.
Oh.
They would... Oh, it was... was incredible. We had a friend who called them the great slide advertising because they were always sort of sliding down into the pit of despair. But Candy just laughed at it all. I mean, they never put anything over on her. She knew right exactly how sickening they all were. But when she left Boston, she came down here. She's married to a student in music who's in Florida at FSU, and she walked into the legislature and she got a temporary job as a typist on one of the tax committees. Well, she's now assistant to the governor's assistant on consumer affairs. She has her own little office and everything. You know, I mean, she's so capable in sort of administrative positions like that. She's so quick that it's really never a question of what people do to Candy. It's always what Candy's doing to other people. Always.
She comes out.
She organizes.
Yeah.
She comes right out and organizes, and she knows what she wants all the time. She's never in doubt, and she just goes right ahead and does it.
Well, how'd you get along with a person like that?
Well, you might ask. We're diametrically opposed. I never know what I want. I'm always going in the back door.
You just had a.
I think it's because we were so completely opposite. That's why we got along so well.
Yes, you just.
We were
had
never
a,
competing with each other for anything because we always had different ideas.
Yeah. You just had a staff director right with you all the time. You didn't have to make up your mind.
I didn't have to do anything. She'd do it all.
That's right. That's the way it ought to be.
Oh, it's so easy.
Yeah. I've always wanted to live with someone bossy. See, not bossy. Who would just take me over? Tell me what to do.
Oh, if I could just find somebody that would take him over. Well, that is it.
Candy's the one.
Yes, Candy's the one.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you all ever navigate together, Debbie, just because you are amenable?
Well, a lot of it, yeah. I'm adaptable, you know, and I go along with things. And I and Candy never suggested anything that wasn't a lot of fun. She had good ideas.
Yeah.
I forget whose idea it was to go to Greece. We decided to go to Greece together. We were both working at the medical center after our freshman year in college, and we decided that summer that we were going to go to Greece the next summer. And I can't remember whose idea.
Here,
yeah. I used to work here in the summertime. Even the summer that I went to Greece, I worked for a month and a half. We didn't go to Greece till July. We came back in September.
Yeah.
But, I don't remember whose idea it was. I can distinctly remember sitting at the table and eating lunch and talking about going and deciding that we were going to go.
Yeah.
But I don't remember whose idea it was. But then the whole next year, Candy organized.
Oh.
She got us onto a charter flight to go from New York to Athens. And in order to go on this charter flight, you had to. Candy always manages. She rationalizes everything. You know, if something is not exactly quite honest, you know, Candy will rationalize the fact that it, oh, it's perfectly honest. You know, she'll figure out a way that it. And logically, she believes it.
Put it in the power of the light.
She believes it. That's right. It's all the way you look at it. Well, her thing about this charter flight was that you had to belong to some organization. You had to swear that you were a born Greek. Well, she figured that she was second generation, so that was good enough, and I was a friend, so that was good enough. So we got it. We were absolutely bogus passengers on that flight. We had no business there. The whole plane was full of Greek families going back to see their long-lost relatives that they hadn't seen in 15 years, and us. We couldn't even speak Greek to
her. It was Candy's doing.
What's Candy's doing? Absolutely Candy's doing. And she picked up right away about how you couldn't stand, you had to get right into a Greek crowd and kick your way right down to the front, or you'd spend all day on the end of the crowd. You couldn't hang around on the end of the crowd waiting to buy your ticket. You had to really get in there and push. Nobody ever, it wasn't rude, it was just the way things were. You couldn't wait for people to make the first gesture, so you had to do it first.
But you didn't adopt any of her ways.
Oh, I did after I'd been in Greece a while.
In Greece?
In Greece I did. Oh, yes. Can't survive in Greece if you don't just wallow right in. Can't. No good being. Can't be polite there.
Not in Athens.
Not even on the, if there's a crowd of Greek people, they're all pushing. And they're all, it's just bedlam if there are more than 25 Greeks in one place. Just absolutely pandemonium. And then, they'll walk away from the crowd and be perfectly relaxed and calm. It's just, I never understood that about Candy's family either, because they always used to yell at each other. And then they'd walk away, and they'd be, fine. That was nothing. They were just yelling at each other a little bit. And I never understood that. I never understood how they could yell at each other and just walk away laughing. I thought that was so strange. I mean, in my family, if you yell at somebody, you yell at them. I mean, it means something. And they just yelled at each other all the time.
You get used to that?
Yeah, I got used to it after a while, but I can remember how it really distressed me when I first...
It doesn't distress you anymore?
Oh, no, I yell right back. Because Marcia, my other roommate in Boston, was the same way. They yelled a lot, too, in their family. So, when I had them for my family for a while, we yelled a lot. And it was very good for me. I can yell really well now.
Good, because we yell out here. Each other at the cattle
and everything.
Well, look, Debbie, it's my bedtime. I see, you see what you do. You see, now that's first rate, isn't it, Trey?
Oh yeah.
Now what you do, what the countryside does. You see, as they talk about these things, they look at them, but they've talked about them before. And they look at them as they talk about them. But when they retalk it, they don't say it the same way. They look at it a different light. It's never repetition. So that, you see, your mind works in several directions, you see. As you talk here, you're also thinking about, you see, what direction should this go? That is, to bring Candy out. Or if you want to bring her out, or... See, whatever you want to do. I think it'd be a little hard to bring her out. I'd keep her on the sidelines. She talks too much, and she moves too much, she'll steal the show. Just keep her on the sidelines. I don't know what you'd do. It'd be kind of hard. Now, the only case you gave was on the chartered flight. But you would just go around giving more cases. Let her yell. And look at those crowds. But that's not what you want to do, really. I'm just making it up. It's not my experience. I can't say. See, all I can do is just look at it, kind of the way I see it as you talk about it. Now, I'd have to get into it. I don't work fast. My mind doesn't work fast. So, you see, and I actually don't hear too well. It's not my hearing. I mean, my perception is not clear through my ears. I didn't realize that until I was in basic training, and I went in basic training with a sour-looking, tall, sour-looking fellow from the university who was in math. You'd think he you think that they would get rid of him the very first thing. You know what he did? He went through basic training. It was hottest in those old barracks down in Miami. And he never studied. His mind just took it all in. You hear it? And after that, I knew it wasn't any use for me to listen too much. I have to say it. You see, I pick it up better, you see. I can listen to it a little bit, but I pick it up better after I, you know, read a little of it. After you record it to typewriter time or two. I get a toll then, and now then I'm all right. But as you get into it, so you see, I can't help him up to all I do. That is something. You know what? I'm interested in generations, and you almost got into that. You see, you went from her parents to her grandparents, uh-huh, and her mother's, mm-hmm, folks and her father's folks and all, mm-hmm, like that. Mm-hmm. Just rattle them off. That'll go nice. A lot of things will go nice you don't realize. Either to talk it, of course, when you talk it, the person not supposed to follow it. It's just too much at one time. Not supposed to follow it. And you can do the same thing on paper. You're not supposed to follow it all, but it looks good. It sounds good. See. I'm just improvising, you see. You got to improvise your direction and your you know, you got to surface. You got to make things visible. It's artistic. I don't like to use it, but that's what I did. Use as little art as you can, but you have to sort of see it. You have to redo it just a little bit. But you don't redo it much, you know. Just touch it up. You know, in your typing, you don't even have to retype, do you?
I never have.
Yeah, so you see, gosh, beautifully.
I mean, I could. I just never have. I mean, I've never spent a whole day doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be interesting to see if
let
I could even
you,
do
let
it.
Me, let me tell you. You start anything you want to, but I'm not interested in candy, and I'm not interested in grease. I'm not. But I'll follow you if you are. I'm interested in that yogurt thing you did, you see, that eating thing you did in France, anything you did there. That doesn't mean you do it, but any of that. But the Greek thing seems so far off, I'd have to somehow, that would take me, sort of jerk me.
Well, you start in France or start anything she wants to.
Yeah, start anything she wants to.
So that doesn't mean, that doesn't mean for you not to do it.
No, when I talk to you, it doesn't mean anything.
I have all my letters from Greece and from when I was in Europe after that, and then all my letters from France. So I'm just interested to read them again. I haven't even looked at them. I mean, I don't think I ever read them. I just... My mother saved them for me. So.
But I could feel, you know, while she was talking about candy and the family, though, I could feel as she talked that she was seeing more and more.
That's right. That's right.
And I think this is the exciting thing, you know. And you don't just do it and then go and do something else. But it can stay in your mind for a while.
Mm-hmm.
This is what...
That's the thing. I'll learn a little bit about this thing. I go on with it a little better. Now that's you project. You see, I like to. I don't do that in anything I know. I mean, it's just my meat. I just like it. See, the the thing of it is it's the only way you can learn. You don't learn by asking questions. Somehow, you see, you've got to start talking. And you see, the narrative, the talk itself, is what does it. You look at it. Don't direct it too much. I think that's a nice thing.
Debbie has so many things to look at, and really.
I didn't care for the barbershop scene. Just didn't make fire. I don't know why. Maybe I'm just got too much of that damn book in my system in there. I'm sort of hard to please. You know, I'm working on that. I'm trying to get that little soft-child lad in my mind, and it's the meanest thing I ever saw. I've got that little book on it.
Focus, the focus of Debbie, to me, of Debbie's barbershop was if she could have looked at somebody like the boy who cut your hair or wouldn't cut your hair, then the other would have been around that. I kept thinking maybe you had looked at him.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Instead of just experience.
You gave it partly as an embarrassing moment, and that's not... nothing to that. I mean you, there's no insight to it, you see.
Mm-hmm.
What you do, you're looking for some insight. The insight is he wouldn't cut your hair and he did cut her hair. Now, you see, I could see that.
Mm-hmm. And you could see him.
I'm just talking. Because I enjoy it. I mean,
it was delightful to listen to. We're saying that, yeah.
Yeah. But Debbie's taste is immaculate. She never writes anything, does she? She don't write. She's not influenced by what I say and all like that. See, she just did her own stride. It'd be awful to be influenced by me.
Well, it'd be awful if you said everything she said was just fine. She,
right.
She could stay home.
I'd never get anywhere.
I don't have to pass judgment on that. I mean, she can pass on judgment. No, that's different. That's different. If I gotta go to bed.
I'm gonna go read my journal.
I think that table in there is too wobbly for your typewriter.
Did you push on it? I just set it up.
Yeah. I think we need a card table rather than that. But anyway, you try it.
We'll try it out.
Mm-hmm.
My typewriter is so new looking. I had it cleaned. And I thought there was something wrong with the carriage, but the spacing wouldn't work. I'd hit the space bar and it would space too much or space too little. And the man told me that there wasn't anything at all wrong with my typewriter. He cleaned it all up and there wasn't anything at all wrong with it, that I was just too impatient with it. I didn't give it time to space.
That's unusual,
isn't it? Why,
Debbie? I said, all right, I'll be very careful with it. I'll pat it up a little bit.
Where was that?
Oh, this little place called the Add Off Machine.
Yeah.
It's up by, it's up on South Main, North Main, up from the square.
Yeah.
And there's nothing, it's a long room with nothing in it except about three typewriters down on a, you know, a where you can stand and practice typing on them. About, four or five different kinds of typewriters down there, and one desk, and this long room.
and two little men that repair typewriters.
Yeah.
And I wanted to have, I thought there was something terribly wrong with this typewriter. And I called Chestnuts and asked, because that's where we'd gotten it.
Uh-huh.
And I asked them where I could take it. And they said the ad office machine. And it looked like you would take your typewriter and then you'd never see it again.
It is channel 2 right, around 500 or 600, and the end of Debbie's first reporting this Friday after supper, 17th November, 72. Channel 2 right, around 500 or 600, and the end of Debbie's first reporting this Friday after supper, 17th November, 79. Channel 2 right, around 500 or 600, and the end of Debbie's first reporting this Friday after supper, 17th November, 72.
I'm going to exercise the horses.
Yeah.
She's going to take the horses.
I'm going to take the horses.
You can help.
And then she started teasing. She said, freeze bolt. Is that what you call it? Freeze plug. I'll bet it's a freeze plug, she said. And Franklin said, oh, let's hope not. And so he looked around and he said, oh, I see, the hose. Jack said, oh, it's that one that's bad, the one you can't get to. And she looked at me with that devil in her eyes. And she said, it'll take about all day to fix it. And I just walked back then. And Frank said, oh, shucks, it won't. It'll just take a minute or two. It's the easiest one to fix. It's to the heater. So he fiddled around there with that thing, and it was kind of hard to get to. But he got fixed for a little while. And all the time he was talking about his daddy. You talk about a son being proud of his pappy. He just grinned and he said, have you heard about my daddy? I said, no. He said, you know what he did with Queen? He sold her last night.
Waldo?
No. It's not Queen. You know what? Babe. He took Babe over to Waldo. I said, why? Took Frank? He did. And he got $100 cash money and a registered
quarter horse.
He said quarter horse.
Oh, maybe
Gelding. Why you want to register Gelding, I don't know. But anyway, and he said, and this morning, and he brought Queen back, and this morning, he got two ponies and a 62 Chevrolet for Queen. And he said today he's really doing some trading.
Mm.
He's going to keep one of those ponies for the girls. And he's going to sell that Chevrolet and that other pony. And he's gone all the way to Jacksonville with that registered for the horse building. And Franklin said, oh, my daddy's really doing some trading. And he's the way he said it. And all the time he was working on that pipe down there, you know, he was dirty. He was lying up on the side of the car. And I sort of bent over so I could hear what he said. And then he said, and that truck's going to be ready to roll, too. He said, I'm not going to have any more mishaps. That one that I had was enough. He said, after I get through working tonight here, then I'm going to work the rest of the night on that truck. So it'll be rolling for my daddy. He said, it runs good. But you just have to sort of now tinker with it to see that there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. And Franklin walked on out after he fixed my car and put some gas in, and Janet came around. I said, Janet?
I put her up to this.
I said, Janet, you got plenty of room in this garage? Like you got a permanent vest over there. She giggled and put her shoulders up, you know. I said, we sort of know how it is. instead of having two horses in the pasture over there, we expect any morning to have 12. She started laughing. She said, I'm going to tell Eddie that. He'll sure enjoy that. But she never would say that it was in the way. But this, I'm going to tell Eddie that, you know. And she sort of ducked her head and she said, you know, you have to do a few things. But she wouldn't talk about it. It was cute. But they must have had some words, she and Eddie, about that truck.
Well, he got two working places, one where the lift is, and then the empty one. And he needs that empty one. But could he have his truck over after 3 weeks?
Cookie's got the whole countryside, doesn't he?
And then he put all those horses out here, you see. It didn't have any sod left, you see. All it's got was just down to the sand. Or he's going to have a sand lot like he got over his house. You've been writing to Ms. What's her name?
Rice. Yeah.
Well, that'll be nice. How's she write? Lively?
No. She just tells the news. She tells that her granddaughter's having a baby and that she's got roses in the garden. But I wrote to her, and I asked her to send me her recipe for marmalade, because she told me about how to make marmalade in France. She spent one morning at breakfast telling me how you make marmalade, English marmalade, and I didn't take the recipe from her. So I wrote to her today, and I asked her if she'd write it down and send it to me. But it'll take her a long time to answer, because she doesn't really like to write letters. When we were, she came in March and she left in May, and she spent the whole first month she was there in Nice writing one letter to one friend, because the letter was really just something for her to do when she didn't have anything else to do. When she really didn't have anything else to do, she'd write this letter, and she'd write about a sentence at a time, and it would take about a half an hour to write that sentence, and then she'd find something else to do. But I think after about 4 weeks, she got the letter done. And I wrote to her in the first part of September, and I finally got a letter back from her about a week ago. So I figured that was 2 months a letter. I ought to have a letter back from her in January. I'll be that right. She doesn't send me letters.
I can't hardly that's hard to believe.
Did it take her that long?
Yeah.
She doesn't write letters. She just and write things down.
Yeah, she talks.
She talks. She doesn't write things down.
She ought to take a lesson from Madeline. She's a letter writer. Mm-hmm. She tells you what goes on. And it's that little staccato way she has, and you don't think she's saying much, but she says a great deal. I've been after Faye to edit them every time she gets one, do it like I do, and put a cover sheet on it and give the circumstance and all like that. She too tries then.
Tries then. Mm-hmm. Oh, I do.
That shows you where the mental energy is. Nick made all those tapes up there of Mr. Lytle. Well, he just built bonfires around Mr. Lytle. He brought one or two of them down here for me to. Yeah. All he got just a bare naked tape. Hadn't got a thing to go with it.
And he just likes to listen.
Miss Rice. Now, you thought she was kept pretty busy.
She did. She made up activities for herself. I didn't realize that until today. I always thought she was genuinely busy. But I think she'd find something that someone else should have been doing or was going to do, and she'd do it. But somehow, I don't know how she did it, she had a real genius for making twice as much work out of something as was really there. She used to make tea for us in the afternoon. We'd have tea. But she'd work it so that she'd have to make tea every time somebody else came into the room, so that she wouldn't just make tea for everybody all at once. But I'd come back from school and she'd make tea for me. And if Vincent was there, he'd have tea with us. But if he wasn't there and he had a class and he was late coming back, then she'd make tea again for him. And her daughter was never there when we had tea. She was off shop doing the shopping for dinner or something. So she'd come in even later. And Dan Dan would fix tea all over again for her, because you can't let anybody drink tea that's been sitting around for 20 minutes. You have to make it fresh or it's not any good, it gets bitter. So she'd make tea. She'd spend 2 hours making tea every afternoon for everybody. Now that was making a lot of work that wasn't really necessary. But everybody had a fresh cup of tea. Nobody had to have stewed tea, had fresh tea.
Well, did they consider that a pleasant thing? I guess it did.
Yeah, sure. And
they appreciated it.
Sure. I mean, she liked to sort of cluck. And, you know, I'd come back from school and I could make a cup of tea. There's nothing to making a cup of tea. Except Dan Dan wanted to make the tea. And so she would set right in. As soon as I walked in the door, well, you need a cup of tea. That's what you need, because anybody in the world needs tea in the afternoon. You can't exist without it at 4 o'clock or 4:30. And so she'd make the tea right away. And of course, I'd sit down and have it right away. I mean, no matter what else I had on my mind to do, I'd have tea before I did anything else.
With her?
With her, but she wouldn't sit down if she could get up and be making another pot of tea. She'd get up and make another pot of tea. She used to start her cup of tea with the first shift, and she'd drink part of it with you, but then she'd always be getting up to fill your cup again, or going out and boiling the water to make the next pot of tea. And if she could, she'd finish her cup with the first shift, but usually it would wait till the second shift, and if there was a third shift, then she'd have a second cup of tea. Everybody else would have two or three cups of tea each shift, but not Dan Dan. She'd make hers last. All the way through, getting up and running around. Then she'd clear everything. Every time you'd finish, she'd clear everything off the table. She'd take all the spoons and all the mugs and all the biscuit tins, take them off and bring them back on again for the next shift. So I thought that she was making an awful lot of work for herself that wasn't necessary. And I'm not really sure why she did it. I think she just wanted to make sure that everybody thought she was industrious. I'm not sure why she did it.
But you didn't notice it then?
I didn't notice it. I didn't notice it till today. That she was always doing a lot of things that I just thought she was busy all the time when I was living there. It didn't occur to me that she was repeating everything. And that when she really couldn't find anything to do, she'd work on that letter to her friend. But otherwise, she'd find something to do. She worked in the garden a lot, but she always worked in the left-hand back corner. She never worked in any other corner. She was always in that one back corner around the artichokes, weeding. But she just stayed there. And there must have been an awful lot of weeds in that corner. She used to tell me how much she liked to garden. She really loved to garden, and it was the only thing that kept her going. And she just loved to get out and dig. But she never really gardened. She just worked in that one corner back there. She did one time, she did do a long project of washing all the shutters around the house. And she did a lot of projects. she washed the shutters, and for the wedding she planted a lot of things, a lot of flowers around the house. But
now that's that washing shutters, that's a considerable amount of work.
Oh, that's a lot of work. That is, I helped her one afternoon with a shutter, and it's an awful lot of work because we had little louvers about that wide.
Yeah.
And you had to wash down with soap and water and rinse them off on one side, and then flip them over and wash down the other side.
Yeah.
And then flip them back over to the other side that was dry and oil them. So that they'd stay looking sort of presentable for another year, and then flip them back over and oil the other side.
Well, I didn't know you oiled them.
It keeps the paint from peeling, I think, if you oil them.
I catch the dust.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
But you rub it in.
You put it on and you rub it in.
Yeah.
Real well. It's just sort of like a little bit of shellac over it. But they were tall shutters. They're door size.
Yeah, now shellac, I can understand that.
Well, no, but this was just oil.
Yeah. And they were the size of the door?
Mm-hmm. They were all French doors. They open out into the yard. They didn't have any windows in the house except on the second floor. They were all doors. The windows were doors that went out into the garden. And the shutters were outside the glass. You fold them back in the morning. Made the house really dark when you shut all the shutters.
Well, now, I got the idea that you and Ms. Rice had pretty good talk.
We did. We talked a lot because in the tea time, that was the only time you could get her to sit down very much, was when we had tea in the afternoon. And she talked... Well, she talked a lot about how crazy the French were to me, or at least that's what I was thinking about today. She thought that her family was so crazy because her daughter married a Frenchman, and she thought that this was just absolutely the craziest thing that could happen, and she sort of had to re-civilize the family because they'd gone across the channel and gotten uncivilized, and it was up to her to re-civilize them.
And that's what she talked about.
Mm-hmm. How she could... And she was really, I think she was really very glad that her granddaughter was coming back to England, because then there would be a little bit of hope for her. She'd, you know,
yeah,
be civilized if she lived in England. And she, well, actually it was Miss Judy now that told me about the hands in France. You have to eat with your hands on the table in France. In England they always put their hands in their lap and they sit up straight. And we saw that when all the English people came to the wedding, they sat up and they put their hands in their lap, and they never ever put their hands on the table or their elbows on the table or anything like that. But the French people are like this, just all over the table and littering the table with everything, bread, dishes, everything. That's what English people think it is, because they are very proper socially, I guess. I don't know. I haven't seen enough in England to know whether they're really as proper as Mrs. Rice.
That's what Mrs. Rice would think of partly as anarchy.
Mm, oh, yes. She used to yell at Vincent because he was always had his elbows on the table. And he used to sit in chairs and hang his legs over the side. You know, he was 18. He'd sit and hang his legs over the edge of the chair, and she thought he was just... He wasn't English. He didn't sit up straight and put his hands in his lap. He was just terribly francophile.
I didn't realize that. Now, I knew that the English could sit in a chair. I learned that when Faye took me on that trip over there. Those little bitty old spindly straight chairs. Well, they could sit in them perfectly straight. And they didn't slump, they didn't cross their legs, didn't look uncomfortable. That's when I gave
their
up.
Their hands in their lap.
Yeah.
That's
the
thing.
English of all people.
Hmm. And I remember when the English people came for the wedding.
Do you think the English would do that?
I really couldn't say.
Mm-hmm. Well, you see, the English are great talkers. That's what they do in Oxford. That's what they go to Oxford for. They learn to talk.
To talk.
Oh, yes, they may not know anything, but they can just lift a chin and talk, can't they?
Mm-hmm.
And now the French don't do that.
Oh, they talk, but they don't lift their chin. They wave their fists. And they fight. I mean, they make it kind of a little bit of a fight, or it shows up like that.
Yeah.
They don't sit down and have a discussion like the English do.
But you all didn't do that in Mr. Unal's family. No one there to pick a fight.
No, we didn't. We didn't fight there, but we were part English there. See.
Yeah.
We were a little bit English. Because Madame Unal was English.
But you have seen the other?
Oh, yes. And you can see it. Well, you can see it when the two cars run into each other. The way two French people get out of a car, that two cars that have had an accident, and you'd think that probably the world was coming to an end rather than a fender was bent, the way they yell at each other. Just yell.
But you've seen it at the table when they were talking?
I've seen it in cafes.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you sit in a cafe and people and they're discussing, they use their hands all the time. They gesture with their hands, like Italians do. But I don't know anything about Italy. I've seen that they gesture a lot. Maybe even more, but in Nice it's half Italian anyway. So maybe that's why they gesture so much in Nice.
Oh.
I don't know.
Yes, sir.
Well, this business of Mrs. Rice started having busy work. Now that wasn't in that. That just came from you just reading her letter and reading some of the letters. I mean, that you realized this.
Or just when I sat down to try to say what it was that she did.
Oh yeah.
It came out that all she did was try to keep herself busy.
And there was nothing that she said. You know, in a letter or anything. It's just that you were looking at it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's. And all the time you were with it, this didn't come out.
No. You didn't see it.
And what did you call her? Dan Dan?
Dan Dan, that's what they call her. Like, for they made it up, the name. But she loves France, but she says she'd never move there to live. She'd never live there. But I think she sort of wants to come every year so that she gets a little bit